Hey everyone, it's Lori Twitchell. This week on the Nothing Trivial podcast, we've got some fun things happening. We're going to talk to all the creatives out there. Anyone who wants to be a creative, wants to make your life in a creative environment, I've got some tips and advice for you. The best advice that I was ever given, finding the right mentor. We're also going to discuss what it means to live a tikkun olam life. I've had a lot of questions about that. Got some Ted Lasso news and more all coming up. Stick around. So let's talk a little bit today. I thought it'd be fun to talk a little bit about being a creative and trying to build a career as a creative. I think that's always been tough, but when you have a creative spirit and a creative heart, it's difficult sometimes to manage. Do I get paid for this? Is it something that I do in my off time as a hobby? You know, but everybody who has a creative spirit and a creative heart feels the same way. They would love to be found of value. Someone pays money for their work. Someone comes to them and says, you have done something beautiful with your brain or your hands, and we really just want to pay you for your work. It's not always easy making that a career, though, and it can be really tough. And it can be really hard on your spirit. Like, I have always known that I wanted to be a writer. I don't think that I knew that, you know, enough to voice it when I was a kid, but I was an only child. Both of my parents worked. I was on my own a lot. And so my play always took on a very creative space. You know, I had Barbies, I had Star Wars figures, very well-rounded. And of course, you know, Barbie in the dream house, her butler was R2-D2 because he was just the best companion ever. But, you know, all of my play was that sort of creative mind-stretching things. I do remember at a very early age, my house always had typewriters in it. I don't know if that was something that everyone's home had, but my mom did a lot of work that took typing. And so we had the electric typewriters, we had the big heavy typewriters kind of things, but they were always in those cases and they weighed like 100 pounds, or at least that's what it felt like back then. And I remember one day very specifically heading to the backyard with my big old heavy clunky suitcase full of typewriter. It was a carrying case for the typewriter, but sitting in the backyard in the sun by the swing set, and I took one of my favorite books. It was a Looney Tunes book, because I remember very vividly having all Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and all the characters on it. And I typed painstakingly onto that one sheet of paper, one button at a time, that book, word for word, onto the page. And I was so excited that I had written a book. I also remember exactly what inspired that. And it's one of the reasons that I absolutely love the medium that I'm in. If anyone remembers the Daffy Duck, there was an episode where Daffy Duck was arguing with his artist, and the artist was just represented by a hand and a pencil, and Daffy had this big showdown with the artist, totally broke that fourth wall, and it really made my brain just explode with ideas, even at this really super young age. I could have only been probably 6, maybe 7. I don't even think I was that old. But Daffy had this argument with his illustrator, and the illustrator, you know, took off his bill and put his bill on backwards. And, you know, Daffy's pointing and it turned him in. And I just thought that was fantastic. So for those who are in the creative realms doing things for kids, there you go. It makes an impression. And it was the first time that I had ever really thought about the people who created the work that I loved. Of course, I couldn't voice that at that age. But the best way that I could handle it was taking that big old clunky typewriter to the backyard and painstakingly copying that book letter by letter, space by space. I can still remember. And I was very strategic about it. If I made a mistake, that paper went out and I got a brand new piece of paper and started all over again. Just kind of funny, because this is probably the 15th attempt at this segment of the podcast, and I just deleted all of the other ones, and so it works. But that creative heart and that creative vision stuck with me my whole life. And, you know, when I was looking at colleges, I've got 2 degrees. I've got one in creative writing and one in technical writing. The reason for the technical writing degree, anybody grows up dreaming about writing or editing computer manuals or the instructions on how to build a piece of furniture. That's technical writing. Or, you know, translating medical work, you know, transcriptions, things like that. I specifically added that degree when I was looking at becoming a writer because every single person in my world loved my creativity beyond a shadow of doubt. I always had the outside the box thinking. I always had the creative ideas. I remember my best friend's dad at one point, you know, I had come up with a VBS thing for the kids, and I had put the armor of God into language that I thought that they could understand. So it was like sneakers and t-shirt and, you know, belt and jeans and hat. And he just got the biggest kick out of that. I will never forget him, you know, slapping his knee and saying, "You have the best brain." I thought that was wonderful. So everyone knew that I was an outside the box thinker. I like to shake up the snow globe. You'll hear that a lot from me. But everyone down the line was very worried about me as well. And they all cautioned that creatives can't make a living. They don't go into it as a career. I very specifically remember one professor looking at me and saying, "You have the ability to speak to people and do all these things, and it's amazing, but don't study creative writing. Don't even think about that. You need to study something like business or teaching or journalism," which are all fantastic things. Just when you are at the precipice of choosing what you want to be for the rest of your life, it's really hard to think about every single person saying, "Starving artists, you can't make a living, you can't do this, you can't do that." I settled on, I kind of still turned the world upside down. I ended up going to a small college in West Virginia, which is no more. We'll discuss that in a future podcast. It was called Alderson Broaddus out of Phillippi, West Virginia, about an hour below Morgantown. And that's where WVU is for those of you. And that's also, by the way, one of the reasons that you will never see me not tearing up if anybody plays Country Roads. It's a thing. I've just got to stop everything and listen and sing along. But at Alderson Broaddus, it was a small liberal arts college, and we had a very small population. Everybody on campus literally knew everyone else. The biggest problems with crime that we had at the time were if you would walk across campus late at night, you might run into one of the 2 skunks that like to spray students. Everybody had to work at lookout for that, and Dewey, the security guard, you know, it literally was small town, really idyllic. I love it. That's also where I got my first taste of being on the radio, was there. I hosted a radio show every week. I loved it. But at Alderson Broaddus, I got to study creative and technical writing. And at the time, there weren't any technical writing degrees out there, or at least not anywhere that I could find. And so I really wanted to do this. The technical writing side of things was my safety net. It was my catch-all. I got to study under one of the women who founded that degree, and it was wonderful. And on the creative side, that was the first place in my life that I found grown-ups, adults, who were ready to pour into the next generation of storytellers. And some of the best advice that I have ever received as a writer and as a creative came out of that journey at Little Alderson Broaddus College. And today, you know, it's funny, I started recording and I was going to just give you writing tips for writer's block, and we'll discuss that one in an upcoming podcast. But I started talking and then I sort of bunny trailed off because the advice that I received from two of my favorite mentors on the planet was so invaluable that they eclipsed the advice when I was talking. So I went back and I actually scrapped the earlier intro and I came back to re-record so that I could give credit where credit is due. That is Jeffrey Del Cole and Carol Del Cole, husband and wife, both on the faculty in the humanities division, both of them teaching creative writing in the creative writing track. And Jeffrey has unfortunately passed away, and he is one of those that, if you ever met him or knew him, the world doesn't realize what they're missing without him. Just incredible man. Carol and I are still friends, and she and I keep up together. And, I'm going to be real honest about this, and she has heard this before because I've written it out. I don't think she's heard me speak it, but her husband was one of my most hated professors. I dreaded going into his classes all the time, not because I didn't learn. And the classes there were very small. We were in a room with maybe 15 people. I had classes where we had only four. And so it was almost always just a really good round table discussion where we all got to talk and we all had voices and we were able to really have that good one-on-one time. And I hated going into those classes with him because every time that I turned something in, and keep in mind, this was back when there weren't digital copies. It was always paper. So you turn in the paper, you watch it go in the basket, or you watch him stick it in his briefcase. And whenever they came out, I knew as they were getting passed around, it wasn't the grade on the front page that killed me. It was the fact that every single one of those things that came back looked like a true crime scene had happened wherever it was. Red spattered everywhere. And the comments were always so caustic and snarky. I vividly recall one. It was a story that I had turned in. And I can still see his handwriting in my head. And at the end, it's like, alas, the death of poor Nell, blah, blah, blah. And I was just, wow. Okay. And I grew to just hate turning things in. And my grades were good. My grades were really good. But man, the hack and slash all over those copies that came back, just bleeding red every time. And I got to the point of my scene. By the way, I've got to say that Carol Del Cole was the opposite end of things. She was like the softer side of her husband. In her classes, it was all encouragement and you guys are doing great and here's what we want to do. And it was so funny going from, Del Cole to Del Cole in those classes. But I remember when I got to my senior year, I needed to have a technical writing project, a senior writing project, one that you work on for the whole year. And I needed to have a creative writing project. And I got to that point and I needed an advisor. And I was assigned an advisor at the time for those projects. It wasn't a matter of going and choosing and saying, hey, would you be my advisor on this? It was assigned to me. And I had been assigned a different professor in the humanities division. And it was someone that I really loved. I got along with. It was fantastic. His topics weren't, he didn't teach writing. He was in the humanities department, but he taught something completely different. But I remember breathing a sigh of relief when I got that computer printout in the mail before I went back to college and went, oh, yes, I can work with this. That's not a big deal. When I arrived and I checked in and I went for my first appointment, I got to his office and it was a small campus again. So everything was in the same building. It was literally like across the hall from people. And I went to his office and he said, I'm sorry, Lori, I'm not your advisor anymore. What? Seriously? What? And he pointed to Jeffrey Del Cole's door. And I remember my heart sunk, and I thought, I am going to perish before the end of my senior year. And I just hope that some of my poems or my creative work live on past what I've gotten. So, like, every footstep going to his office was, like, weighed 300 pounds. And I went and I knocked on the door and I was like, you're my advisor? I mean, we had a good relationship. We never, like, I dreaded his classes, but we had a really good rapport. And so I was like, you're my advisor? And he said, yeah, sit down. And I sat down in that office on that day. And I still remember the light coming through. I remember the sounds happening. I remember nervously looking out, watching other students go by. They're all looking at me, kind of giving me the thumbs up. Good luck. And I said, how did I end up with you as my senior advisor on this project? And he sat back in his chair and he said, let me tell you something. I've been watching you during the whole time that you've been here. You have a great talent. And the story is not to prop me up at all. Please don't think that. But he said, you have a great talent. You have a great mind. You have a really good mastery of the written word. I love seeing what you do. I was stunned. And I said, I really thought you hated my writing. Like, legitimately, I was trying, my brain was, this does not compute. This does not compute. I couldn't understand it. And he kind of laughed and he said, let me tell you what, there are people in the world who want to be writers and who want to do this as a hobby. And then there are people who want to make a life of this, not a career, but a life of this. And he said, by being so honest in my criticisms and even harsh, I don't remember the specific words that he used, it weeds out the hobbyists versus the people who are going to do that for the rest of their lives. And he said, over the course of your career, you are going to hear criticism at every single turn. And he's not wrong. You're going to hear all the bad things. You're going to hear from people everything that they think that you should change. And if you put yourself into that, you're going to take those criticisms as criticisms of you and of your person. You will not be able to separate yourself from your work. And he said, anyone who is looking at pursuing a career, and this time he said career, I do remember that, needs to understand separating themselves from their writing in order to be able to function that way. And he said, by being harsh and critical in those very first years coming up, not only do you learn the basics, but you also learn it isn't you. I'm not criticizing you. I have always liked you. And man, that was probably the best piece of advice that I have ever had. That training, those years of like walking over to that building and feeling every single footstep as you're going up the stairs and knowing that you're going to be harshly criticized, but still sticking with it every time. And again, my grades were good. It sorted that out. And he said, you have the best potential of a lot of people that have come through this. He said, I see so much potential in you. And I thought it would be a waste to have someone who isn't in the creative realms be your advisor this year. So he, when those lists came out, and I don't know how they worked for the professors, but when those lists came out and he saw that someone else was advising me, he went and shifted his schedule around in order to be able to take me on. And he even changed classes from something. He said it took a little bit of work. He and I had to switch some classes and we had to do some things in order to make some schedules work. But it was a deal well made. And I'll tell you what, that moment, up until then, no one in a professional realm had ever invested themselves in me as a creative and as a writer. And I will never, ever, ever forget Jeffrey Dale Cole for that. And Carol on the other end, who like, even when I share this story online in places, because I give it as advice for people, Carol will say, he loved working with you. I can't stress that enough. If you want to be a creative in the world and you want to make a career as a creative, that is the singular best piece of advice that I have ever received. I carry it with me all the time, and it has saved me on more than one occasion. I've put my technical writing career out there. My very first job was working at a radio station. My very first job in my career, we'll put it that way, was working at a radio station. I was hired as the continuity director, which that's the person who writes all the commercials that go on the air. So I was able to use my degree. And, the feedback, people would come back and the clients would come back and, I'm writing the commercial for a sponsor at the station, and they hate it. And I was able, thanks to all that harsh criticism from him, to not say they hate me, but to be able to step back and say, how do I make the work better? And that's one of the best things that I can give you. Now, I'm not telling creatives don't pour yourself into it. Pour your heart and your soul into it. But when people come back and say, I don't understand this. I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know why this is happening, or this character sounds hollow, or this really wasn't good. I'm able to step back and look at it with a far more critical eye and say, what do I need to do to make it better? Now, of course, I'm a writer, but this stands for anybody who is an artist, who wants to be a filmmaker. Learn from the constructive criticism. Now, nowadays, of course, social media has taken over, and when you put something online or when people see something, I have really harsh reviews out for some of my movies and TV shows that I've worked on. There are places where people are just like, this really sucked. Oh, thanks. But I'm also able to weigh and balance. And my entire philosophy is that I hope after you've read something that I wrote, or if you've watched something that I had a part in creating, that you feel better. People ask about my genre. I want you to feel hope. Or just a little bit lighter. Maybe I gave you a break from all of the darkness that's out there and all of the nitty-gritty stuff. Maybe you just needed a minute for your brain to smile. That's what I hope to offer. That's my genre. It's hope. I want people who have experienced something that Laurie Twitchell wrote or had a part in, I want them to leave a little bit better than they were when they initially sat down. There are harsh criticisms of that because there are people who are looking for gritty realism, and there are people who they don't want to sit down and watch the horse movie about the ranch that needs saved. That's fine. That's great. And maybe you hated it, but maybe somebody else who was out there got a smile or enjoyed it. And the ability to keep going in the midst of that harsh criticism, all of that in my life, in my world, is credited 100% to Jeffrey Del Cole. So if you are looking at a career in a creative realm where you are pouring your time and your hours and your passion into it, make sure that as you're pouring yourself into it, when you present it to the world, you have the ability to step back and say, you know what? I think I could have been better in that one. You're right. I could have pivoted. That advice has been invaluable for me. If you are still here, still listening to my rambling, if you've ever received any advice, I would love to hear it. Coming and comment on our social media and let us know what was the greatest advice that you ever received. But that was the greatest singular piece of advice that I ever received. Coming up in the future, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the other pieces of advice that he gave, and maybe a little bit about that senior project too, because it surprisingly, years later, has come back around. Now is the time in the podcast when I am going to introduce something brand new. It's going to be happening for like the next 6 months now that I've got a podcast. But I've been thinking about segments, I've got movie reviews, and I do have some fantastic interviews that are coming up. Just got to work out some of the technical details on that. But working on the Tikkun Olam life, which is part of what I've made the tagline of the podcast. I have a lot of people who ask me, what's Tikkun Olam? It is the healing of God's creation by one small act of kindness at a time. And I came across that from Mr. Rogers. And it's just, it's a life of service. It's all about giving, giving more than you receive, and loving others. And I got the idea when I was watching The Voice, of all things. This season of The Voice has been extremely fun for me. I've really enjoyed it. I have always been a Michael Bublé fan, but seeing him on The Voice in the last two seasons has just made me think I really want to sit down and have a game night with him, or talk with him and hang with him. He just seems so fun. And while I was watching this one day, he is literally like sunshine and rainbows to watch on that program. And I got the idea of doing a Tikkun Olam shout out called the T.O. Hero. That's what I came up with. And so this week, I just want to highlight Michael Bublé, not for his music, not for the coaching on The Voice, even though it's fantastic. Both of those are fantastic. But literally just being an encourager. I fully believe there are people in the world who are T.O. heroes, and he is one of them. He was the inspiration for this whole thing of coming up with a T.O. hero shout out. Even when people don't pick him on The Voice, he is just so utterly delighted to see that they've made it onto the show. I have watched him stand up and applaud other people. I have watched him with tears in his eyes talk about how he's just so excited to watch people grow. You didn't pick me, but you got a fantastic coach. He is just one of those people that I believe, I don't know what his faith is, but I believe that's what Christians are supposed to be out there. How can you be salt and light in the world if you are staying in your little bubble? It's very hard for the light to shine in the sunshine. You gotta go into those dark places for the light to be something different. And I don't, again, I have no idea what his faith is. I'm not saying that he's anything like that. I just think that he is a great example of Tikkun Olam healing God's creation, all of it, everybody out there. And there's a lot of people hurting in the world, one act of kindness at a time. And so I have decided that, you know, occasionally when I find somebody who's doing that, I just want to give him a T.O. hero shout out. That's what I'm going to call it. And this week, it's Michael Bublé. But everyone, anyone, if you are listening to this podcast at all, if you can hear my voice, you can be your own T.O. hero. All you got to do is smile at somebody at the store who's having a rough time. You know, look at somebody. As soon as you start looking around at the world and you start really seeing people, it's very easy to see what their needs are. And a smile, a compliment, grace, peace, being kind, all of that makes a big difference. So this week, as you're out and about doing things, look for the opportunities to be that T.O. hero. And if you are not watching The Voice or you don't have any idea what I'm talking about, go on YouTube, find some of those clips of Michael Bublé. You'll see what I mean. What better way to follow up that T.O. hero segment than with Ted Lasso news? I am so excited about this. People have been talking about it for a while, and there's been whispers and rumors and discussions, but it was officially announced just minutes before I came in here to record, so it's fate for me to cover it, that Ted Lasso Season 4 has been picked up officially at Apple, with our favorites coming back, Hannah Waddingham, Brett Goldstein, Jeremy Swift, and of course, Jason Sudeikis, who is the fabulous Ted Lasso himself. Let me give you what Jason said in a statement when they released the official news. Here's what to expect from Season 4. As we all continue to live in a world where so many factors have conditioned us to look before we leap, in Season 4, the folks at AFC Richmond learn to leap before they look, discovering that wherever they land, it's exactly where they were meant to be. See why there's a good tie in there with the Tikkun Olam T.O. hero thing? Coming up, they've also got a new executive producer that is coming in, Jack Burdett. His credits include Nobody Wants This, Modern Family, 30 Rock. It's just fantastic. There's also going to be, already connected to the show, you've got Brendan Hunt coming back. You've got Brett Goldstein attached to write and executive produce. I love Brett Goldstein. Honest to goodness. If anybody is listening to this and you have a connection to Brett Goldstein, would love to meet him. There's a reel going around currently all over TikTok and Insta and Facebook where he was interviewed about shrinking, which is also one of his programs that he's helped create and write. And when he went to star in that, he shaved his beard, which is like a very big part of Roy Kent's character and his, Brett's entire personality. And he talks about how, you know, women don't like him for his personality. It just made me laugh. Seriously, I have told my close friends, I have a crush on Brett Goldstein's brain. I listen to his podcast, Films to Be Buried With. I just, like, soak up every word. I think that he is one of the great creatives of the time. I love the way that he writes. I love the way that he acts. He also has, like I said, Shrinking with Harrison Ford and Jason Segel. Brilliant program. I love it, too. Highly recommend it. Also, I am such a fan. I bought Super Bob. Seriously. That is a program about a superhero looking for love. If you're a Doctor Who fan, it stars Catherine Tate. And it is just, it's fabulous. I love Brett Goldstein's brain. The fact that he's going to be writing and executive producing, that just gives me a lot of hope for this one. I adore him. I adore his work. I happen to think that Ted Lasso and Shrinking both are some of the best written programs that you are going to find in this generation. I didn't jump on board with Ted Lasso right away. I wasn't one of those people. I was not a subscriber, but I finally picked it up and started looking at it when I had, I believe, 6 different people over the course of, you know, a couple of months, literally refer to me while sitting in business meetings as Ted Lasso. And they were like, never forget, I was eating lunch with one of my close friends and he stared at me after I said something. And he's like, you really are Ted Lasso, aren't you? Just looking at him, and I must have had a blank look on my face and said, I've never seen the program. And he laughed. He said, there's no way, really? And he said, you are a real life Ted Lasso. And that was the last person that I was finally like, okay, I really admire this person a lot. So now I'm going to go watch Ted Lasso. You need to know what people are thinking about you. Like, is Ted Lasso a jerk or an idiot or someone horrible? It's probably a good idea when you hear from several people that this is you to go find out what it is that they're talking about. And honestly, I started the first episode a couple of times and was like, okay, so he's just kind of a goofball that doesn't really know a lot, because that's sort of what comes off in the beginning. I was cringing at a lot of the things, and I was like, people think this is me? And then I got into it, and I started watching a couple of episodes, and then it was like candy for me. So easy to sit down and blow through an entire season and turn around and go, wait, where did my afternoon go? Where did my evening go? It's one of those binges. You know, you've got a tray of brownies that you just baked that are warm out of the oven, and you go and you get one, and then you just start watching TV and you grab another one, and then by the time you look down, the whole thing is gone. And you're going, whoa. But the thing is, it's not just the candy or the sweets. The beauty of the writing in this is that it's funny. Every single line in this television program is meant for something. I still find things. I have watched it so many times over. I even bought I bought a subscription, a 6-month subscription for my friend Carla Loriano, which you may have heard me talk about her. She's one of the greatest writers that I know. She is also my best friend. She's one of the people that keeps me sane. And I went and bought her a subscription to Apple just so she would watch it. And she did, and the same thing happened. She would call me up and go, "Yeah, you really are Ted." And, you know, we bought each other. She has a little Lori corner of her office, and she's got a Ted Lasso stuffed bear. I do too. And some other Ted Lasso stuff. And it's just, it's real. I put the Believe sign on my tattoo. We will discuss that in a future thing too. A Christian who has a tattoo. But Believe is the point of the show. Ted is the ultimate encourager. And I love that people think that I'm Ted. Also, gonna get like serious about this. I was in therapy at the time that I was watching, you know, this initial couple seasons of Ted. And there's an episode in there where Ted has an anxiety attack and he doesn't know what it is. Actually, he doesn't understand what's happening to him. And that was the first time for me that I ever saw on film something that completely replicated something going on in my life. I have anxiety. I also have been diagnosed with PTSD. If you know my history, you know, I had cancer. I went a year without speaking. I've got a lot of horrific issues from that. I've got a lot of things that have happened. And I went to my therapist and I said, I watched this episode of Ted. And I know he was waiting for me to get to a couple of certain episodes because he would go, "Have you watched this part yet?" "Nope, I haven't." "Okay." Because there are ugly parts of Ted's personality that were, you know, things where he was super depressed and he puts on a face for people and he starts breaking in times and it's tough to watch. But that anxiety attack that Ted had was the first time I saw on film everything that I go through when I have one of those anxiety attacks. And for me, all of my senses begin to shut down slowly. Or they might actually shut down quickly. I'd want it Hobby Lobby, that was too bad. What ends up happening for me is that all of my senses turn on hyper high. I can hear everything. I can taste everything. I can see everything. That's why one of my really bad anxiety attacks happened in Hobby Lobby. There was just too much. There was music and people, and it was right before Christmas, and it was bad. And when my body starts taking in all of that sensory input, it's because somewhere something has triggered me with danger. Even at that one anxiety attack, I had my phone in my pocket and I had put it on vibrate, and my phone was just vibrate, 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 like right against my, and so that was all adding to it too. I ended up with that one. I had ringing in my ears, and then the world started turning black and white, and I ended up, my kids walked me out to the car because I couldn't see exactly where I was getting to. And at the time that I was experiencing this, I didn't realize that it sounds stupid now when you look back at it, but I didn't fully realize that that was an anxiety, a full-on PTSD anxiety attack. That was something big for me. That was one of the worst ones that I've had. And I was watching this episode of Ted Lasso, and what do you know, like, he's got ringing in his ears and the colors are changing and he can't really see and he can't really breathe and he doesn't understand what's happening. And Rebecca comes up to him and says, "Ted, you're not dying. You're having an anxiety attack." And I went right back to my therapist with that the next session, and I was talking to him about that. And so that was the first time that I recognized that. And it was healing for me to understand that I'm not the only person on the planet. It is not that I'm having a physical problem. Some of that is a physical issue. I've had to uncover layers of some of that. But the beauty of Ted Lasso is that you watch this program and you are completely entertained at the same time. It's educating you. There's no expository anything in this program. They don't sit there and preach at you. It's not an educational pamphlet. It's not one of the movies that we used to have to watch when we were in school. You get to the end of the episode and you go, "Wow, I didn't ever know that. That is really wild." You also see in place, the program is not a Christian program. It is not a faith-based program in any way, shape, or form. But what you see, again, you know, I mentioned Michael Bublé earlier. it is an example of what I think that we need to be as encouragers. You need to be the light in some ugly situations. And I believe that, you know, you watch how Ted goes through some things and he doesn't hit anyone over the head with, you have to do this or you have to do that. There's one scene, there's an entire storyline, where he gifts each of the players when he very first gets there books. And they all have their books in that, you know, Jamie Tartt tosses his book and you've got Roy Kent is like, what? And later, oh, Trent Crim, one of my favorite characters. I love Trent Crim too. All of these characters feel like friends. They're fantastic. But, you know, he says, well, this book is about blah, 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 blah. Oh, man, am I supposed to be this character? Like, it's beautiful. And Ted's leadership style is all about encouraging and it's all about making people smile. And he's got a lot of lassoisms. He's got stupid things like, well, I don't know if I can do that one, as my doctor told me when I wanted to eat Alfredo all the time. It's a little rich for my blood. You know, he's got those crazy lassoisms. But there's beauty in it. And you're completely entertained at the same time that you're, I'm going to say it, for me, my soul gets filled. That's my refill. That's, Carla has also said that too. When she's having a rough time, she'll go, I need some Ted therapy, and we'll shut off the world and go watch Ted Lasso. Again, not a faith-based project at all. It's honestly, I have the words in my head. It's better than that. It's really good. It's entertainment that is the epitome of what I have said. And what I said in the earlier segment, what I want to do when someone has watched or participated in something that I have had a part of creating, I want people to feel better when they have done watching it. That's the epitome of this program, Ted Lasso. I can't highly recommend this enough. There are storylines in there that will offend people if you have, you know, deep thoughts about cussing. That's the first time that I brought up Ted Lasso in the very, very first thing in my review of Captain America, the new one, bothered me so much. It's just my personal thing to see Captain America cussing while he was in uniform. Ugh, drove me crazy. And I mentioned that I'm not precious about that. I'm not. Ted is one of my favorite programs. Roy Kent is one of my favorite characters. And every other word that drops out of Roy Kent's mouth is a cuss word. If that offends you, this isn't going to be the show for you. I've had a couple people who wrote to me and said, thanks, I'm not ever going to watch Ted Lasso because you said that. That's not what I was trying to say at all. And I feel like you're doing yourself a disservice if you miss that. I've tried to share this with some people. I've shared some of my favorite clips from the show with people, and they couldn't get past that, the cussing. There's also, oh my goodness, there's LGBTQ representation in the program. There's lots of things. I feel like it's the real world that is out there, and it's a representation of the real world. And if you are only looking for entertainment that's going to suit your lifestyle and your perspective and you don't want to be in that, then yeah, Ted Lasso wouldn't be the person for you, but you would also be missing some really beautiful things. So I just feel like I need to put that out there. If you haven't watched it, obviously you need to go check it out. Once you've finished with Ted Lasso, go over and check out Shrinking. Same thing. You get some really beautiful things in there. Harrison Ford, I think it's one of the best roles of his career, and I love all of his characters. It's just really solid, good, beautiful entertainment. So Ted Lasso, coming back for season 4. We will keep you updated with news and information on that as it becomes available, but go check it out. You have been listening to the Nothing Trivial podcast, which is, in fact, a Lori Twitchell production. Everything that you see, hear, and experience for the most part during this podcast is a production of the mind and imagination of Lori Twitchell. I know, it scares me a little too. Sound design, editing, and generally ensuring that I sound good without embarrassing anyone in the family has been provided by John William Twitchell. Music, Loopster, from Kevin MacLeod, can be found at Incompetech. If you've made it this far in the podcast, kudos to you. You get bonus points for the day. Go have a cup of coffee. Enjoy some little extra special thing on me. Thank you. We'll look forward to talking with you again soon.